Welcome to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Greg Garcia, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, CIO, and G6. Greg, in many ways, this is a return trip to the program, but in ways, this is new. So I guess welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here, and it's great to see you again.
Last time we talked, you were over at the Pentagon as the really executive director of the U.S. Army IT agency, which I think no longer, quote unquote, exists anymore. But so now you have a new role here at the Army Corps of Engineers. So let's talk about that transition a little bit.
Yeah, I actually moved over officially in February, but I had a great chance to spend several weeks with Bob Casimir, the outgoing CIO, to really get immersed in the understanding of the Corps of Engineers' mission and tasks before me. And it was a great opportunity to learn. You know, you hear about the Corps of Engineers, but you really don't know what they do until you really unpack their mission. Really dramatic effect across the globe in the MilWorks missions and CivWorks missions. And an area that's picking up for the Corps of Engineers is interagency missions. And those three things are really putting perspective on what the Corps does. We're talking about 37,000 dedicated soldiers and civilians delivering engineering services worldwide, really. And they're seen as the premier research and development and engineering technology for warfighters and for CivWorks. If you think about the Corps of Engineers just within the United States, there's 600 dams, 12,000 commercial inland navigation channels. They dredge more than 200 million cubic yards of construction and maintenance annually. They maintain 925-plus coastal Great Lakes and inner inland harbors, provide water storage for over 330 million acre-feet, and provide, this is something that I actually got to visit, is the 24% of the U.S. hydropower capacity is managed by the United States Corps of Engineers. That's 3% of the total electricity produced in the United States. So my role was really kind of understanding what the Corps did and how information management, information technology is used, consumed, and enables those critical missions across the Corps of Engineers.
In many ways, moving from an IT agency to really a civilian works, a military works agency, is a big change. I mean, has this been a big learning curve for you, or did you have a background that maybe you could share us a little bit of how you kind of maybe came back to the Corps of Engineers, or at least came back to the engineering world?
When you see the mission of the Corps, you get excited about learning about the mission of the Corps. So I don't think the learning curve was that great in the sense that understanding your customer's mission, your stakeholders' interest in that mission is really something that every CIO does in one form, fit, or fashion. In the Corps of Engineers, it's just a different set of mission, a different set of stakeholders, but it's so exciting that you really throw yourself into that to understand that critical work. So I would say it's a great staff here at the headquarters, great staff in the divisions and districts. That's one of the things that's sort of unique with the Corps. They're all across the United States in 1,400 offices. Everyone in the United States has a little touch of the U.S. Corps of Engineers in their backyard. And that's what's exciting, is that they're really prevalent across this great country of ours.
You talked a little bit about the mission, but one thing that's always interesting to me is that when I talk to CIOs and they come to a new agency, the technology is always the same, right? It's you're still talking about the same basic building blocks, the network, the storage, the cloud, the mobility, whatever the buzzwords are. Did you find them the same here, or does the Corps of Engineers add another level of complexity because there's maybe some more, if you will, green IT that you had to kind of get your head around?
I think one thing that was in common with my previous job in the Pentagon is the Corps of Engineers is currently not on the DoD NipperNet. If you can imagine, the Corps of Engineers is in many places where the DoD does not physically exist. So for the effect of the mission, both stateside and overseas, the Corps sort of runs their own Nipper, which we affectionately call the CorNet. And really, there's possibilities of what we can share with the DoD. And that's, we'll talk about some of the initiatives we're doing to blend that capability. But the priorities are generally the same. You know, cybersecurity is number one priority. The cultural shift from operations over cyber and the move to balance of cyber with operations, the move from cyber being a six thing or a CIO thing to a commander operational important element, and understanding those risks, those are all things that are prevalent in many of these organizations.
Well, I know we'll talk more about those priorities, so we'll say that's later in the program. But first, talk a little bit about the makeup of your office. A lot of people maybe are not as familiar with the Corps of Engineers. How many federal employees, how many contractors, and your IT budget for 2016?
So that's one of the joys we've had is The office of the CIO is really broken into a couple of points. We have a major service delivery provider in what we call the ACIT IT, Army Corps of Engineers IT delivery, and their headquarters down in Vicksburg. And then we have the headquarters staff. And then we have IT people really in every district and division. And those totals are about 600 civilians, about 700 contractors. And that program scope of the dollars that we have across the what I'm responsible for in delivering of IT outside of the military and civ works. But if you think about the infrastructure piece, it's about $225 million. So that's quite a size of business that we manage. But as you know, a CIO is not only responsible for delivery of the network, and it's really that whole IT spend enterprise that they have to address. So that's somewhere about double that number that we look at and help portfolios manage.
I imagine when you look at budget, when you look at people, because IT bleeds into every mission area, when you talk about, you know, hydroelectric power, just as one example, there's an IT system somewhere in there that's running that effort. And while the CIO may not be responsible for that specific system, the CIO probably is responsible for the infrastructure that feeds the data back, that ensures that people can make good decisions. Is that where kind of your role fits in?
We'll just spend a little bit of time on ICS and SCADA. As you know, this is one of those things that has evolved in the IT domain. Is we traditionally thought about networks, applications, but there is this whole genre of IT, as you say, that runs in industrial controls and in supervisory control and data systems that run physical facilities. So as you can imagine, as a navigation, locks and dams, hydropower, there are numerous ICS SCADA systems in there. And the Corps has done a great job to actually be on the forefront of addressing the cybersecurity of those kind of touch points for IT. Many of these are closed systems or restricted systems, but you know, there's categories of these types of cybersecurity risks that they are exposed to, and that gets into the important part of not only the technology, but the people part of cybersecurity. You have to blend both technology, process, people, and partnerships to make sure that it provides a secure capability.
When you talk about your transition, your role, do you end up being here more of a strategic CIO, more of an operational CIO? Where do you see the kind of role? And again, you're only a couple months in, but still, yeah. At the Army IT agency, just for comparison, I think you had a foot in both sides of the aisle. But I imagine here you're probably maybe more strategic side just because of the size of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
I'm one of those individuals that likes to keep a foot in both worlds, because if you forget about today and focus only on the tomorrow part, you have a mission that gets affected. One of the great challenges for the Corps is it's absolutely a day-to-day mission. In civil works, flood fights, as you know, we're approaching the spring rain season. These are missions that absolutely are critical to economic deliveries, financial deliveries for people's jobs, and life and safety. So there isn't a break time to sort of ignore the current operational pace and focus on solely on the future. And then you can't only get caught up in today and not worry about tomorrow. So again, I've really enjoyed focusing in my jobs and my roles on both the sort of the tactical and the strategic, and blending pass between those two. That's one of the exciting things about the Corps is it is a significant organization involved in today and solving the world's toughest engineering challenges of tomorrow. So we get a good blend of seeing the critical role of IT in day-to-day operations and how it can multiply our effect in the future.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk more. My guest is Greg Garcia, the Army Corps of Engineers, Chief Information Officer, and G6.
You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions. Now, here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Greg Garcia, the Army Corps of Engineers, Chief Information Officer, G6. Now, Greg, before break, we were talking a little about your transition to this new role with the Army Corps of Engineers as CIO. We talked a little bit about the makeup of your office. Let's talk about some older priorities. I had the last CIO from the Army Corps of Engineers on my show about 4 years ago, so that's in technology time, that's a huge amount of time. So the last time we spoke, the conversation was around moving to Windows 7. Now I know DoD is telling its services and agencies to move to Windows 10. So let's just catch up on where you guys are at with Windows 7 and how you're on your way to Windows 10.
So 7 done. That's probably the quickest way to say that. And really, we look forward to the DoD's move to Windows 10. I think there was a very bold move by the DoD CIO to really push the department forward together versus individual programs or segments of the service. So I think the strategy of, I always like to talk about what your E is, what is your enterprise. So really, the DoD is approaching the big E enterprise of, we're all going to move to 10 together. And I think that's very strategic in the sense that the cyber risk that we briefly talked about before doesn't really care which doors open. They'll go around to get to any door. And as you know, we're all connected in the middle. So I think Windows 10 is a great opportunity to move both the user experience and the cyber security forward together. We've started with some initial activities to plan the migration for Windows 10. But I do have to say that there are some other competing immediate priorities that we're working through that we're going to have to balance and synchronize. Jason, I'm not sure you're familiar with, but we're piloting the Army's move to the JRSS as one of the sites that's basically going to pilot the how do you get from external of Nippernet across Nippernet into the JRSS security stacks and then back. So that will be something that we're eagerly pressing forward through. That's got some critical milestones through this summer. And we're also the pilot for Office 365 for the Army. And that is also ongoing through the summer and late fall and winter. So really, we have these three significant major muscle movements that we're trying to blend together to synchronize and tackle the what's common ones and what's different in some sequence that allows us to not impact the mission that we talked about that's so important. So really, Win 10, Office 365, and the movement to leverage the DISA and DoD joint regional security stacks are the big three rocks we're going to tackle, in addition to keeping our cyber health across both ICS and SCADA and the network going.
So the fact that Windows 7 is, as you said, done, you're now looking at Windows 10. How big of a lift is this for you guys at the Army Corps of Engineers?
You know, I think the lift is in the application world, in my humble opinion. As we've gone from 7, what you find out is the application and the application testing is generally where the rubber meets the road for success or non-success. And the ability of users to get to email and all that works great. But if you're hitting information systems via a browser and you've got to make sure all that works. And we have many, many applications that we're going to have to push through. And that's really what the long pole in the tent is. We've worked some pilot implementations of the first blushes of what the secure host baseline was going to be through DISA and the Army. And they're refining that within, you know, DISA's refining their release. They're pushing that to the Army. The Army's going to work on that through our great partners in NetComm. But really where the difficult part gets is assessing those AISs against that secure host baseline and making sure those applications perform well. And that's where we have to turn to our internal partners in the Corps of Engineers and work with our communities of practice and our portfolio managers to get through those thousands of applications in this short time frame that they set up for a year to make sure that we don't lose functionality as we migrate.
How do you deal with the fact that Windows 10 could break an app and you have to be prepared to either fix the app or not move to Windows 10? The migration usually is one of the toughest things. Is there some kind of sandbox? Is there some kind of way that the Army more generally or DoD more broadly is setting up some kind of testing environment that everyone can use?
So I think that's where partnership is so key. As you know, there are standard applications against really all segments of the DoD, so that's not really what we're worried about. What you really have to worry about is what is unique to your organization. And the big Army doesn't use a lot of our applications because they're very much involved in other aspects of the mission where we'll have unique civil works applications or things that are involved in project construction and how we do our finances, because the Corps is funded through many mechanisms that are not the same as in the DoD. So those are the big systems that we really have to pay special attention to and get them copies of this baseline early and spend some time in the critical path to get them to be allowed to figure out exactly what works and what doesn't work. And then if there's a modification or advancement required, is cycle time to get that done and tested again.
Is the first step is knowing, okay, first, what's our application inventory and where do they fit on the life cycle timeline? Meaning, are they new? Could they easily fit in with Windows 10? Or are they 10 years old and there's no way they're fitting in with Windows 10? Is that the first step? Because the reason I'm asking is I think a lot of agencies are going to be following DoD's footsteps in the civilian world specifically to move to Windows 10. So anything you can talk to best practice-wise would help.
I think the first step is convincing people that you're really going to move to Windows 10. You know, we've had a lot of these mandates that are put out there, and you've got to be clear about we are moving. And I think that's been some of the discussion, and I think that's sort of the benefit of having the DoD put out a single letter to all services to say we are moving. So there isn't this incremental resistance. So I think that's the first thing is to explain to portfolio owners is that we have no choice but to move. It is a lawful order that we're going to follow. And then once you get that clarity of we are going to move, which is not a small task, and then you have to really explain to them the timeline. And I really have to give credit to the senior leadership of USACE in the sense of when the first week I got here, we were reviewing our financial outlook for IT spend over the 3 to 5 year period, and they were wise enough to put in a wedge for Windows 10 migration. And so really, I think you can't under budget for Win 10 app testing. What I would suggest is you should figure out what you need, ask for a little bit more, and then if you don't spend it, return it. But if it's time-sensitive delivery, you really got to prepare your staff. Another thing that we're doing right now is going through the list of all our engineering projects because all organizations face the same kind of scarcity of resources, both people and dollars. So what we're trying to figure out is what can we winnow off the list to free up people and free up resources so we can focus on the most prioritized task. And briefly, that's what we just highlighted about Win 10, JRSS, and 365 and our cyber security initiatives. So we're trying to get through that list and, you know, winnow off 10, 20% and just explain what risk is involved in that and then manage that risk, but focus on successful implementation of the most critical programs.
Let's go down the path of Office 365 as well. I know that's probably a question we'll hit to later when we talk about your priorities, but I think it's related because part of what Windows 10 is, I think, a move to the cloud, which is what Office 365 is as well. So talk a little bit about that pilot. You guys are piloting this for the rest of the Army. Do I get that right?
Yep. So we participated with, as you know, there are different levels of security in the cloud. So we partnered with the Army COG6 and did some initial piloting of a level 2, which is sort of the non-restricted side of the security thing. We did some mission threads about how to collaborate. So it was kind of fun. We actually had an Apple phone, an Android phone, a Windows tablet, a desktop computer, an Apple Watch, and we were all collaborating over a series of charts. So it was really kind of exciting about this power of collaboration and knowledge sharing. So we were very excited about that. But that drives this ability to actually move to what we're projecting, a level 5 cloud by summer. And what we're doing is partnering with our great friends in the Air Force and Defense Logistics Agency, and the three of us are partnering together to move to this capability that will blend the power, the economic of that buy of three organizations forward, and then leverage some of the same government-only L5 ITAR compliance space to begin to implement the capabilities that are in 365. It's really kind of the ability to do that mail, the collaboration. You'll still have your office productivity at a local device or a cloud, depending on your pipes. And that's one of our challenges that we really have to pay attention to is, as I mentioned briefly before, the core is spread out across the United States. And so connectivity to our stakeholders and clients is really critical. And we really need to see how that performs across those thin wires that are sort of very remote locations to see how much of the cloud they can consume in their mission space.
So is the move to Office 365 really a part of the move to cloud for the Army Corps of Engineers? And I'm also interested, you talk about partnering with the Air Force and DLA. I think that's an interesting partnership too, because it's three very separate mission areas.
Yeah, I've always been a big partner guy. You know, my advice to everyone is it's much better to find someone to partner with and really wring out processes and best practices, and really you learn by the challenge. So really, it is an innovative partnership. But you know, having spent my good friends in the Air Force, who I miss and worked for 29 years, it's great that we all actually are inclined to partner. I think you've seen that evolve over the years to where people would absolutely love to not have a single service do something. And that's reflective of the Windows 10 mandate, is that we're really one enterprise despite the patch on the sleeve.
The other piece of this, as you mentioned, is the JRSS. Related to that is an older priority around data center consolidation. I think 4 years ago, the Army Corps of Engineers had consolidated down to 2 data centers and virtualized most of its servers. How does this all relate together? Eventually, JRSS gets, from a technology perspective, gets put into your data centers, or does it stand in between, you know, your data center and the public internet? Talk about how that all fits together.
Sure. Let's just talk a little bit about the success that the great folks at ACID were able to do across the Corps. The initiative that occurred several years back was really to consolidate and pull up a lot of the capability that was being fielded at our districts and at our divisions up to a central processing facility. That effort really yielded some great savings in server storage, virtualization, and really energy savings of loss of requirements at the local level, and resulted in 2 consolidated processing centers. This team effort really was quite remarkable in the sense of the virtualization was achieved in great numbers, and we retired hundreds of servers and disparate storage environments. You know, the number I remember is about 1,500 servers that were physically stood down and solutions in the storage area that were standardized. This allowed great savings, really, for our ability to deliver enterprise VoIP, enterprise email, enterprise storage, and enterprise compute, pulling that up from a local, regional, not COOP, not high availability posture to something that's more robust and more economic, and really sort of pre-position us for a broader set of cloud alternatives for the future.
From a savings standpoint, that in and of itself of saying 1,500 servers are taken down, as you said, energy savings, do you get a sense of how much money? I know you weren't here, and then or percentage, and then what's the benefits, you know, the capability benefits? It's always, I hear, you know, more capabilities for less money.
I don't really know the specific numbers. I've kind of really not gone back to see that because I want to squeeze more savings out. So I'm kind of the guy that says, well, that's so 2 years ago, and there's so much more opportunity. As you know, every time there is a budget shortfall, people turn to IT to squeeze more savings out of that capability. And I believe that the partnership between academia, industry, and the government is still allowing these kind of significant savings to occur. You know, cloud has great promise. Cloud has to be secure, cloud has to be accessible, and cloud has to be workable in the environments that we require it to work. So I think we're really kind of on the bow wave of cresting that wave to really see that blossom. But it, as you know, it's been a slow process, but we've got to be able to make a risk-based decision on, and that's where this L2, L5 pilots have helped us, is to figure out what we can risk in a public cloud, and then maybe something that is more restricted to our FOUO or collectively sensitive information, not talking classified, of course, at this moment for the Corps.
And then where does JRSS fit in with this data center consolidation and again, the move to the cloud?
Yeah, it's an interesting effort in the sense that we're going to take traffic that is typically not on Nipper, and then we're going to get through a cloud access point to get into the JRSS security stacks and then kind of pop back for the interim. But this opens up the question about how should we do transport for the Corps across the United States and across it globally. And I think we're still in the learning stages of what this means. Again, we're back to the very start of our conversation about tactical and strategic. I don't think we know the strategic implications of JRSS yet because we're focusing on the tactical implementation of this difficult project. But I think there are significant strategic opportunities that will present itself once we have a viable, capable, shared security service with the rest of the Army and the DoD, and then begin to look at how we, once we've crossed that fence to off-network to on-network, we have new possibilities of how to do transport that will be just as effective and leverage the buying power of DISA or the Army or our great commercial partners.
All right, I guess something for around the JRSS to come, maybe follow up with you in a couple months once you get down that path a little further. All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk more. My guest is Greg Garcia, Army Corps of Engineers, Chief Information Officer, NG6.
You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions. Now, here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Greg Garcia, the Army Corps of Engineers, Chief Information Officer, G6. One last older priority I want to just touch upon briefly is something called an Army-wide enterprise data platform called the Meter Data Management System. Now, this is measuring energy costs and usage, something I guess I think the Army Corps of Engineers is providing for the rest of the Army. Just talk a little bit about that effort and how it relates to maybe the broader green IT effort that we briefly talked about.
I think this is one of the great initiatives the Corps has done and to really address the President's mandate on green energy and effective use of big data, effective use of innovation. The Meter Data Management System, MDMS, is an important part of our comprehensive effort to use green IT within the Corps. You know, the Corps is absolutely focused on environmental sustainability and least consumption where possible. Those are just tenets of everything that we do, and this green IT effort is a great way to do that. This MDMS is really part of a greater initiative we call the Energy Information Management Program, which is really a Secretary of Defense level program to standardize how we do many of these things. So just what the Energy Information Management Program will do is meet the requirements of the mission, satisfy the OSD Enterprise Energy Information elements, and again, be a cyber robust capability. It's going to enhance the ability to share information because we're going to standardize on data format, data definition, data architectures, and really systems, and it's kind of a small footprint. One thing I'd love to highlight that's a sub-program under the EIM is a program called the Wide Area Visualization Environment, or I like to call it WAVE, kind of cool there. It's a local site-level integration of disparate, sort of a big data initiative to integrate disparate information and collection analysis and visualization of asset data for all personnel, be it maintenance, master planners, energy officers, operations, logistics, commanders, or management, to really give them a holistic picture of their installations. So it really gives them a better way to visualize and operationalize all the tenants, all the elements of their master mission across their installations. And it's one of those things that the Huntsville Engineering Center and the Construction Engineering Research Lab have prototyped and implemented. And it's really exciting. I got to see it actually last week. And it's just one of these great examples of when you correlate disparate data, all the new possibilities of understanding the management occur. So really, again, the Meter Data Management System is part of the Energy Information Management, and the tactical implementation of WAVE is a way to increase situational awareness, increase visualization of asset data, so you can manage that as we meet the mandates from the Department of Energy's Federal Energy Management Program, and really enhance our performance in all these elements.
So I'm interested a little more about WAVE, if you can talk maybe just a little bit about that. You said it's prototyped in Huntsville and the Construction Research Lab. So what's the plan for it? Is the idea that make some tweaks, you know, improve upon it based on the pilot, move it out to other installations?
Yeah, I believe that's absolutely the plan. We're working with our partners and within the Corps to help facilitate that. But that's really something that they, you know, visualize in the future just being a standard part of every delivery of Corps-built information for our military installations, and specifically the Air Force and Army installations where the Corps provides great presence. So this is one of those exciting initiatives that's going to bring great, again, visibility to the to those that are responsible for the operations, that tools that they can use and implement great improvements with.
And generally speaking, is this a commercial piece of software that you've maybe done a little bit of custom with, or is this something built by the Army Corps of Engineers?
They've leveraged a lot of COTS tools. And as you know, in big data analytics, it's really the leveraging of commercial available tool sets to provide what turns out to be a unique view of your information, but it's by providing all that together.
We spent a lot of time talking about some older priorities. You filtered in some new ones. So let's just talk about new priorities now. You talked about Office 365, you talked about the JRSS. What else are you trying to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
One of the great things that I really enjoy is a great relationship with the Army CIO G6. Lieutenant General Farrell and Mr. Wong are great supporters of the Corps, and they've really turned to us to help them learn technology initiatives to better help inform the Army at large. So really, they're looking for us on cybersecurity, as we talked about. That's not really a new priority, but certainly the priority of the next 6 to 9 months is the transition of that culture of cyber is equal with operations. Cyber is a G3 operational just as much as it is a 2 or a 6 to do. And then really another kind of exciting initiative is mobile and mobility. As you can imagine, the Corps is physically dispersed across the United States, and the individuals in the Corps are many times on construction sites or driving out to dams, locks, or other areas. So really they're having a lot of time available outside the office. So one of the things the CIO G6 at the Army level would like us to understand and help with is this really mobile work capability for mission apps as long, in addition to just regular office email stuff. So we're not talking about, you know, do I get a phone or a tablet? We're getting about how do I do flood assessments with a tablet that can synchronize its geo chip with its accelerometer and begin to impact that quick reaction to flooding situations or crisis situations. One example of this that we'd like to highlight is the mobile information collection application called MICA that was involved in Operation Blue Roof Field Management System. This was a system that enabled Corps members in the field to use a mobile device to collect information versus a paper tablet where they'd write numbers and have to go back to the office to transcribe that. They took over 12,000 pictures, videos, and notes that were automatically captured, geotagged, and directly transmitted from the field to various command centers. This is a tremendous asset for on-site commanders to make real-time decisions. As you can imagine, in a flood fight, every minute counts, every hour counts, and there are lives, property, and economic futures involved in every one of these decisions. So this is really, I think, something that the Corps would really love to embrace is how do I do my job on the move, because it's a very outside of office oriented action organization. So that's a very exciting part of that. And then Windows 10 will be part of that mobility, but really how do we integrate collaboration, mission applications, and make that all accessible in office and out of office is one of those great, exciting priorities.
Let me jump in real quick because I want to do a follow-up on the mobile. First of all, I guess the question is, what kind of tablets? Can you talk a little bit about the type of tablets you're using? Are they Windows? And then also, what do you do about connectivity? Because if you're in an area that's maybe suffering from a flood or a potential flood, the cell service, the ability to connect back to the network, obviously, could be challenging.
Yeah, that's one of the great things that is the challenge is I have a daughter at University of Georgia, and if you try to make a phone call during a dog's game, you're just out of luck, right? So this exactly kind of thing is if it is available, you could imagine an emergency, it would be saturated. So these are one of the things that our great team in operations works on and has prepared as specific multiple communication path kits that they can go satellite, they can go phone. But the connectivity part, both home and abroad, is a big part of our mission. We also have the same important mission overseas where an engineering team may be deployed with some troops and needs to get to some specific engineering analysis that's resident in Vicksburg. So these are critical elements of the comm, the connectivity, the access, the correlation that gets delivered both here and abroad. And that, what we want to do is increase that ability to bring that data to the fight at the fight site so they can make those right command and control decisions.
And as far as the type of tablets, are you using multiple types of tablets, or are you really focused on one kind?
I think we started out with some Android tablets, but really I think we're open to the best solution. You know, one of the things that this has done very well is derived credentials. This is the question about, you know, do you have to have your CAT card and a tablet, and that end of the market's very small. So we're looking forward to the partnership with the Army and DISA to begin to think about derived credentials, two-factor authentication in different ways that makes it mission-enhancing to carry a tablet and not worry about whether I've got my card in my pocket or not. And there's several techniques that are emerging that are highly secure that bring that two-factor capability. And I think what you'll see is a sort of an explosion of what tablets will work with that, and really look to our partners and the other security-minded organizations to verify those tablets to be available.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk more. My guest is Greg Garcia, the Army Corps of Engineers, Chief Information Officer, NG6.
You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions. Now, here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Greg Garcia, the Army Corps of Engineers, Chief Information Officer, G6. All right, let's go back to some of those other priorities. I know you mentioned Win10. We've talked a lot about cyber, the culture change there. What are some other things?
I think cloud in general. As you know, we do some processing still at districts and divisions and have two central processing centers. And really back to the economic question is I'm very anxious for cloud providers to be accredited at the appropriate security levels. And the, as you know, the Army is embracing an enterprise resource planning cloud at Redstone that I've heard General Farrell and Mr. Wong talk about. So I think there, as organizations begin to stand up robust capabilities, either on-prem, off-prem, government-owned, contractor-owned, government-operated, contractor-operated, that there will be opportunities for the Corps to leverage some of those initiatives and really look forward to that. And that's really the direction we've been mandated to go. Is if you lay out the roadmap that DoD has envisioned is, you know, between now and, say, 19, 20, 21, 22, that the number of non-cloud, non-enterprise capabilities will grow smaller and smaller and smaller. So the Army has an Army Applications Management Business Office. We're working with them on some of our applications. The acronym is AMBO, and they're really the way the Army wants to approach the cloud, and we're working with them to help that migration of what we need to move first, what the opportunities are, and really back to that comprehensive standard to get to some weighted for our size value while we don't have to replicate each individual task.
Wanted to just jump in there real quick. One of the things you talked about was the appropriate level, and there you're talking about both FedRAMP, which is the government-wide one that DoD is a part of, but also I know DISA looking at MilCloud and new specs came out from there. Are you looking, is the Army Corps of Engineers looking for level 4, level 5, even into the, you know, what they call high baseline under FISMA?
Again, for our Office 365 implementation, we're looking at a level 5 ITAR compliant cloud capability that will be provided by Microsoft. So that's really where the, again, we mentioned the Air Force, the DLA, and our elements are partnered together to get that capability. I believe that build out is coming here in the next couple of months. And we're kind of, we'll be a flight follower of the Air Force and DLA. And then they'll get some of that started initially. And then, you know, they'll have to work with DISA, what that means on stigging and certifications and security connections. But I think that process is well on its way, and we'll hit some bumps, but we've got a lot of power behind that to get through those challenges.
You've talked a mix of both back office functions, for instance, you know, whether it's HR or finance or what have you, but also you seem to be mixing in some of the mission areas to take those applications to the cloud. Is that a major priority for you to look at your mission critical applications, say which ones make the most sense and give us the most benefit and move those to the cloud? Is that on the horizon?
Yeah, I think that's the discussion that's occurring. One of the things I really intend to do is within the community of USACE is have strong partnerships with our portfolio owners and our communities of practice and really establish plans and actions and requirements for cloud readiness, data standards, architecture standards. You know, these are the challenges that we all work on, but really kind of put some transparency in that process, and that will help us decide where to invest our resources to move these things along in coordination with the guidance that's put out from Army and DoD and OMB. But I think that partnership is crucial because I think as a CIO, you can't just say you've got a partner to do. Just because you write a memo or a policy doesn't mean it actually gets funded or prioritized. And I think that's where you got to build those partnerships to bring all those boats up together to get some of those high priority ones done.
You mentioned cyber several times. Let's circle back around to that. There's a lot of effort going across government around continuous monitoring. You mentioned JRSS. Where is the Army Corps of Engineers when it comes to cyber? What are some of your priorities there?
One of the benefits is we are all part of the DoD process for our cyber scorecards that originated from above. So we participate in those reviews. We participate in those discussions about what the cyber priorities are. And we really get judged alongside everybody else. We get inspections from various cyber pundits on how we're doing. We're partnered with our cyber on cyber protection teams and really are leveraging other elements at the national level and at the government level to bring that requisite discipline into the cyber that we address. And I think it's been a win-win for both of us. We have a lot of great business practices, security practices that we've shared with the rest. I think our cyber's very much enjoyed our partnership because they're able to pull for ICS and SCADA some great lessons learned and provide those to national laboratories and to other members of the community to help them learn and do.
Well, Greg, I know we're almost out of time. There's been a ton to talk about. We could probably talk a little bit longer. Before I let you go, I know a lot of vendors listen to my program, so I always got to ask the question about vendors. What should they know about working with your office? And if you could fold in, I know several years ago, 2006, 10 years ago now, there was a big A76 competition where there was a team of agency employees in Lockheed Martin that won the effort to really centralize, consolidate IT. Maybe mix all that together in terms of what should vendors know about working with your office.
I think vendors really are the way we get things done. The challenge is there are so many ideas out there, and you have to turn ideas to practically implementable activity that brings value to the customer. As we all know, there's not a shower of IT dollars that comes down because there's a good idea out there. You're going to have to carve off what we're investing and what we can invest differently to bring savings to what we do. The Corps has a significant IT investment currently. As you know, running our own networks, processing centers, the mission applications that we have, the connectivity that's required, those are all ripe opportunities for good ideas. And really, one of my roles that are really important as the CIO is to interact with industry on a regular basis and get that feedback and come to those forums and share and exchange ideas. And that's really what I would suggest is I want to be an engaged partner with both our fellow CIOs in the National Capital Region and our great industry partners that can bring insights and solutions and cost-effective savings to what we want to do. You know, as for the A76, we've completed that. As you know, that was a competition between the government and industry, and really that phase of that activity has ended. The folks that were in the winning organization have folded into the CIO's office, and there is a contract that supplements that work that is underway. But we really look for industry's involvement in the mission and the great mission of the Corps of Engineers, both locally and at the districts, at the divisions, and nationally and internationally. We see in the Corps a lot of new projects that involve interagency, as we mentioned at the start of this show, and that's going to bring new relationships. You know, the Corps of Engineers is working with our partner in the Veterans Administration to work the Aurora Hospital. So those are new partnerships, perhaps linkages between a set of folks that have traditionally worked with VA that maybe haven't worked with the Corps. So there's new opportunities for all those individuals to share lessons learned and partner together to give this great organization the capabilities at the right price.
Greg Garcia is the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, CIO G6. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
It's always great to see you, and I enjoy our exchanges. Thanks again.
Greg will continue this conversation on May 12th at 10 a.m. when he takes part in our Ask the CIO online chat, where you, our listener, can ask him your own questions. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com.
Thank you for listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions. The entire show is available on demand on federalnewsradio.com. Search Ask CIO.